This is eFactor Radio, created by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. And now here's your host, David Wolf.
Welcome to eFactor Radio. I'm your host, David Wolf. Our guest on this segment is a member of the faculty of Haas Business School at the University of California, Berkeley, where he teaches entrepreneurship and innovation as a part of the MBA program. Naeem Safar is also the founder of Concordia Ventures, a company focused on educating and advising entrepreneurs on all aspects of starting and running a business. Naeem did six business startups and has extensive experience in mentoring and coaching entrepreneurs. He was the president and CEO and has held several senior marketing and engineering positions at several technology companies. Naeem did six business startups and has extensive experience in mentoring and coaching entrepreneurs. He's the author of three books on entrepreneurship. Joining us on the line from his offices in Silicon Valley, California, is Naeem Zafar. Naeem, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. How are you?
Doing well, sir. Your career has been very rich in terms of growing companies, developing innovative products. What were the key drivers for you as you built the companies you built? You worked in the marketing and the marketing areas for those companies.
Well, I'm basically an electrical engineer by training. And I started my first company when I was 5-6 years into my career, really for my own need. Because I had an unmet need, and I needed better tools. So I said, well, why don't we start a tools company? So that sort of launched my entrepreneurial career, and then bug never left me. Ended up working on another five after that. So question which you asked, what it really is the joy of working with really smart people and knowing that you'll have a big footprint. So that's really the two main issues which I think drive most people to be entrepreneurs and be start companies.
I think if I have this right, you have an engineering or technology background. Were there companies you ran and grew that weren't necessarily technological in their focus?
No, the first few companies were all technology-based because I was an electrical engineer myself. But now, in the last 5 years, since I've been teaching at Berkeley, I'm actually involved with all kinds of businesses and advising or as a board member, which range anywhere from food to retail to fashion to technology. So because same principles apply to no matter what kind of business you're doing, the principles are the same.
What are some of the key principles as you speak to entrepreneurial students that you want to drill into them, that you want them to understand or that they just may underestimate or not understand when they start out?
So there's a few high-level principles which I'll mention in a second, but I actually want people, entrepreneurs, to develop a set of personal filters because they're going to have multiple ideas hit them all the time as yeah. They hit me. Which ones are worthy of their time and pursuit? So you have to develop a personal filter so you can filter out kind of dumb ideas from kind of good ideas to really good ideas.
Yeah.
And I write about that in my book, ebook, 7 Steps to a Successful Startup. But at a high level, I won't go through the filters here, but to answer your question, what are some of the fundamental principles which apply no matter what kind of startup you're doing, technology or fashion or food or anything else? First, you need to find team members who are complementary to your skills and are the best you can find in the world. Because the quality of the first 5 or 10 people, or even first 2 people, which dictates the culture of the company, how company behaves and will act, and what kind of talent will you attract. So that is a principle which is very important. Are you attracting the best kind of people? And to attract that, do you have a strong enough vision and qualities that good people want to work with you?
Sure.
So that's maybe the paramount one. But the other ones are important too. Able to not just spot an unmet need, but have a knack for validating that need by able to talk with customers. My first 2 or 3 companies I started, I didn't talk to a single customer because I thought I was 27 years old. I was so smart. Why did I need to talk to anybody? And I completely missed the mark and cost me 3 years of my life. So you have to have a knack to talk to customers and have a deep understanding in what is necessary. And then some other, you can go down the list and talk about some other aspects, you know, understanding the business model. How will you make money? You know, who will pay you? How much you have to pay out? What's left? That clarity seems obvious, but is rare.
I was going to ask, do you have entrepreneurs that are, perhaps they're so in love with their idea or so consumed by the idea itself that they forget about that piece, that revenue model?
All of them, including myself in the early days.
And me as well, I understand.
Yeah, but, you know, over the years, as I've now worked with maybe 700 or 800 entrepreneurs in the last, you know, 20 years, so now it's more clear to me than it used to be. So this is some of the advice I give to people I mentor.
You pointed to one misstep, but are there any other sort of, I'll call them, I don't like to use the word mistakes, but things you might have done differently that would be instructive for our listening audience at E-Factor Radio?
No, the list is long, actually. And but the good news is, and this is one of the main difference between Silicon Valley culture and some of the other places, that here we celebrate failure. You are much more useful and probably will get a job with a higher pay in the next company if your current company was a spectacular failure.
Mm-hmm.
The main thinking is that somebody else has paid the tuition for your learning, so I don't have to. So specifically, I think learning is something we talk about quite a bit and don't hide it under the rug. So in my multiple things which I failed at and learned from, the hardest one is picking the right team members. Really, I'm clarity which is coming to me these days is that there are two kinds of people, or two kinds of philosophies of hiring people, I should say.
Yeah.
Either you hire people because of their major strengths, or you hire people because they lack major weaknesses. So that those are some of the mistakes. I mean, I can give you a longer list of people mistake, but those are some of the hardest mistakes. The second one I tell is that validate that there is an unmet need. Don't be a solution looking for a problem. Just because you think there's an unmet need, the key word here is validate. And validation is not what most entrepreneurs do. Most entrepreneurs go to a customer and say, voila, look, I have this wonderful idea. Do you like it? That's not validation. That's attempting to sell poorly. So validation has, you never reveal how you're going to solve the problem. You need to put your finger on what is the problem. Where do people even look to solve that pain? How often do they look? How much are they willing to pay to solve the pain? When was the last time they even solved a pain like that? Have they ever history of buying from a startup company? Who makes the decision? Who can kill the decision? How often the decision is made? Those are the questions you have to ask so you have clarity before you go forward.
We're visiting with Naeem Zafar. He's the author of 7 Steps to a Successful Startup. That's an ebook, and I imagine there's a website we should give as well, Naeem, please.
Yeah, all of the books are listed at naeemzafar.com or my publisher, which is 5mountainpress.com.
Okay, thank you for that. You're the, of course, you're a faculty member at the Haas Business School, but you've also created Concordia Ventures. What was the genesis of the creation of this company, and what kinds of activities are you focused on there?
So Concordia Venture is about educating and helping entrepreneurs worldwide, because and I'm able to assemble a brain trust with connections I have in the Valley as well as overseas. So when people come for advice, we can put our heads together and give them advice, which ranges anywhere from how do I get started to does my idea make sense to how do I raise money. So that help comes in forms of these ebooks, comes in forms of workshops and boot camps, and I'm doing a series of them with E-Factor, as well as teaching in different places and then some one-on-one consulting if that's what's required.
Many facets of communicating for the cause of entrepreneurs. I wanted to touch a bit on the environment now. You're an individual, you're a professional that has built businesses, even taken them public. Give us a sense of the temperature out there right now with respect to inflows of capital into new innovation.
So I think we saw bubble create a very unrealistic investment environment, and it has taken about 10 years for that thing to clean up. Investment environment is different than it ever used to be for a couple of reasons. First is, it is so easy to start a business now. The cost of starting a business has dramatically come down because of cloud computing, software as a service, able to find resources anywhere in the world like Elance.com, and having communities like Social Network to find other entrepreneurs and customers. So what used to cost millions of dollars now is could be done for tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news and bad news. Good news is that many more people can easily start a business. That's great. The bad news is for a venture capital or an investor's point of view, there's just too many people who can start a business. So what's changed specifically to your answer to your question is now VCs and investors look for a lot more traction than they may have looked for a few years ago. A few years ago, they would have taken more risk, bet on the team. Now they want to see not just you have, like if it's an internet-based business, not just do you have users, but how many tens of thousands of users do you have and what's the growth rate? So these are new metrics. They want to see a lot more traction before their needle will move. So which means the bar for the entrepreneurs is higher. It is exciting. It's positive and momentum is there and there are more people investing. And so I'm seeing a very positive sea change here.
It sounds like there is a flow and there is willingness to invest in companies that have some traction and some metrics and some validation, as you call
it. Absolutely. Absolutely. In the heydays, I mean, if you take out the year 2000 as an exception,
yeah. We
U.S. Venture capital industry will invest something around $20 billion a year in startup companies. So number went down to maybe 17 or 18 in the middle of the decade, but it's coming back up and maybe even will exceed. So we're fairly steady. There's nothing to be compared with what's going on in other financial sectors. Because this is risk capital, and when economy is down is usually when the talent is more available and things are not at chaotic, so a lot of good companies start.
That's an interesting picture you paint. It's almost one of relative stability amidst relative chaos outside of this innovation space, and that's the first time I've heard it expressed that way.
Yeah, even let's look back in history. You know, there was a spate of companies which came out like Facebook and location-based services. When do they all start? They all started in 2002 to 2004 time frame. And what was going on back then? We were just coming out of from the doldrums of the bubble.
Yeah.
So same thing has happened in the last 2-3 years. So I'm pretty optimistic about the outlook of innovation we are going to see in the next 3 years.
Where is innovation looking right now for innovation, if I could ask such a preposterous question?
Well, so there are two themes to notice. One theme is the platform-based computing. So we never had platforms. What's a platform? Platform is that somebody has done like 80% of the work, so you don't have to start from scratch. iPhone, a great platform. You can just focus on using that platform's underlying infrastructure and create something which will run on top of that. Now Android, now Facebook, and then Salesforce.com, Force.com. So these things did not exist 10 years ago. So that has brought a uniformity. That has brought for entrepreneurs access to customers and standardization and has made it a lot cheaper to start businesses. That's a huge underlying theme which we should acknowledge. And so there's a second trend which I was going to talk about was about open source. Open source and access to talent anywhere in the world. You know, today you want to do some kind of a graphical design thing. You know, you can hire a firm and you'll see three designs and you may like one of them or not. And, you know, it can only be, you're tapping into some three designers' creativity if you're lucky. But I can go to an Australian website, 99designs.com. I can start a contest. And contest means I can say prize is $500. I want to see some examples of either logos or websites or a book cover design. And there could be 200 entries from all over the world, people who will bid. You can see their entries on the website and select what you like. I mean, that's unprecedented because there's a platform which allows people who have talent to express themselves and they can sell their knowledge worldwide. Same thing with the iPhone app. I know entrepreneurs who are making $100,000 a month selling an iPhone app, two-people company. So this is the platform computing, the beauty, that you have unprecedented access and ease of starting businesses, which never was possible before.
Naeem, what is Ticon and what role are you playing in that endeavor?
Right. So I'm actually involved with two organizations, which in addition to eFactor, which may be interesting
sure.
to your viewers. So TIE, or T-I-E, so it's www.tie.org, is the world's largest network of entrepreneurs. This is, we started 17 years ago in Silicon Valley.
Wow.
Now has 55 chapters in 13 countries and 14,000 members. So the TIECON is the annual conference which takes place in Silicon Valley every mid-June. And we just had our 17th year. And I was one of the chairmen for boot camps. We did 6 boot camps as 2-day conference. And they were so that was, so I'm a charter member of TIE. So this is an organization which is worth knowing because their chapter may be in a city near you. Secondly, is an organization called Open, which is, and we're doing an annual conference called Open Forum. So opensiliconvalley.org is that website.
Okay.
So that's similarly serving entrepreneurs. And you know, eFactory is also a great organization, which is worldwide.
How has the social media platform changed the world from where you sit in terms of innovation and in terms of growing companies?
Completely.
Okay.
And this is really we just seen the tip of the iceberg. Because when people begin to connect, the social graph they create of each person has a unique social graph will be the next way how we will buy stuff, how the advertising will be done. And the completely marketing and PR rules have been rewritten. And the guy which I follow in this, a thought leader, is David Meerman Scott.
Yes.
So DM Scott is this Twitter handle, and davidmeermanscott.com. And he wrote a book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, and I had invited him to speak at TIECON this year, and he did. And the book is really eye-opening that what we used to believe, how people used to buy, is completely changing. It's about earning your customers' trust and being helpful to them and not pushing things on them.
Yeah.
That's the way we buy now.
Yeah.
And so all the companies having to readjust to this new reality. And it brings a lot of new dynamics. There's a trust, then you need trust jockeys like Yelp or some of the people who will do ratings.
Yes, it's not only subtractive, it's an additive thing as well.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. So it creates new opportunities, and new opportunities is always good for entrepreneurs.
Well, I love that. So we should mention we've been visiting with Naeem Zafar, celebrated entrepreneur and thought leader in all things entrepreneur and innovation and starting businesses. Well, one last thing I wanted to hit before we close out. What was give us a sense of the color of going public with a company. What was that experience like for you?
So when we went public, it was 1993, and it was completely different experience back then.
Yeah.
Because going public was a joy. It's joy in multiple ways because, A, public money is the cheapest kind of fundraising. It's the lowest cost of raising new funds, which is exciting. It's the liquidity for the founders and employees, which is exciting. It brings you new credibility. And the whole experience is very high impact, fun field, full of excitement. So it's a very joyous occasion. And I still remember clearly the day it happened and how it happened.
Yeah.
Now, because of SOX 404 and a whole bunch of unnecessary deregulation, that joy is completely gone out of that process. Now it's a drag. It's a drag. It right away tax about $3 million on your cost of running your business the day you decide to go public. And number then multiplies every year. So we need some serious overhaul because we have seen a number of IPOs go down, dwindle down dramatically, and companies in general rather not go public. And that's terrible for American-style entrepreneurship. We really got to rethink this.
Naeem, we really appreciate your time on the eFactor today. Naeem Zafar, the website, www.naeemzafar. Naeem Zafar, thank you so much for joining us on the eFactor.
Thanks for listening to eFactor Radio. Get more podcasts with your premium membership at eFactor.com.